This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Daly. Our guest this week is Representative Tracy Mann of the Kansas Big First District. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Representative Tracy Mann next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 530 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Congress is facing a number of challenging issues at a time when partisanship is real and political unrest is rampant. Kansas Big First District Representative Tracy Mann says emotions are running high.
Well, you know, and specifically the violence we're seeing around the country is just so sad. And well, I think we got to acknowledge, you know, it's evil. You know, when you see Charlie Kirk be assassinated, I mean, that is just plain evil, heartbreaking. My heart breaks for his family, his wife, kids, other violence that we've seen around the country as well. So it's just a reminder to everybody, we got to keep praying for the country as we all believe in and work to make America all it can be, and believing that our best days are yet to come.
One of the concerns is of those individuals that are willing to lead, that have concerns, and rightly so, about being in a position of leadership for the nation.
You know, members of Congress are safe. They're secured, but, you know, we've got to be vigilant, and that's true of folks that are in office, but that's true of, you know, not in office. You know, we have seen violence and crime a lot in our urban areas, you know, that's just been on the rise. So we've got to, I believe, enforce the law, and we've got to not allow lawlessness, violence to occur in our country.
Partisanship and polarity has been common on Capitol Hill, and we're not even in an election year now. There are some big decisions that must be made. What do you see progress forward on spending and a continuing resolution?
Yeah, so the government, you know, the fiscal year of the federal government ends September 30th, the last day of this month. Big picture, you know, we're $37 trillion in debt. We need to return to what's called regular order, where Congress does 12 individual spending bills. The House passes, they conference that with the Senate, and then the president signs them into law. It looks like three bills we're going to conference, and that Congress did not conference the bill for years. So that's a really important part of the process. So we have to turn to regular order as we work to get the you know, our country back on track from a fiscal standpoint.
We have a 2018 farm bill that expired in 23. It's been extended twice. The chairman of the Ag Committee is looking to move policy. Do you think it has a chance to be done by the end of the calendar year?
Yeah, I certainly do. But I want to remind everybody that what we're able to get passed in the One Big Beautiful Bill, which you could more accurately call the Working Family Tax Cut Act, in addition to great tax policy to really help our, you know, agriculture producers, is we were able to strengthen and fortify crop insurance. We're able to strengthen ARC and PLC for the next 6 years. Both of those, we'll see an increase every year in reference prices for the next 6 years. That's a good thing. Common sense reform to food nutrition programs, doubling the dollars for MAP and FMD, market access programs and foreign market development to help us expand and open up other markets overseas. So the bulk of what is included in the farm bill got passed, you know, in the One Big Beautiful Bill earlier this year. Now, there's a handful of other things that still need to get done. Some people are calling it a skinny farm bill, but it's being called a skinny farm bill because of all that was already got passed and signed into law here a couple months ago.
Truthfully, there was a lot in H.R. 1, but the trouble with H.R. 1 is that it covers the 25 crop year, but the the payments don't go out until October of next year. We've been through budget reconciliation and been through budget rescission about cutting government spending. Is there the political will in Washington to come up with market facilitation program payments or emergency assistance or something that can help row crop farmers get from this point now until next fall?
Well, I've been talking about this loudly, publicly and privately, you know, here in Washington. Certainly seems like there is a lot of folks, I don't speak for anybody else, but, you know, a lot of chatter, both sides of the aisle, both the House and the Senate, that we've got to get something done for our farmers because things are dire. When you look at where production costs are and you look at the commodity prices, you know, it just doesn't work. I mean, the question is not going to be how much money do so many farmers lose, but, or the question is not going to be if they lose money, but how much. You know, yields vary widely. In Kansas, looks like we're going to have a lot of really good yields. That will be helpful because you've got to make it up on bushels. But there's a strong desire on the part of many, me included, to include that disaster relief or something to help our farmers here. And it can't be something that we pass, let's just say, in the next few months, and then those dollars don't go out the door for over a year. You know, it needs to happen quickly. To really help our farmers as they end this year and start next year.
Do you care to throw a dart at the wall of what kind of dollars it might take? Because in the first Trump administration, that was $28 billion that went out in MFP payments, and the situation now appears to be as tough, if not tougher.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm not prepared to you know, indicate what that number is, but I would say rest assured that is well known. We're talking about this, boy, on the ag committee, but also not on the ag committee, in other committees and in the halls with folks that represent ag districts, also folks that don't represent ag districts. A bright spot, at least in Kansas, is, you know, we have a lot of beef, a lot of cattle. Cattle prices are all-time highs. So producers that do have cattle in their operations, you know, that's helpful for profitability, but certainly tough times on the family farm right now.
When I talk to members on the minority side on the Agriculture Committee and in the lower chamber, they would like to take another look at the SNAP cuts that were placed, and they would also like to look into rural health care, especially into rural health care, fearing that we're going to lose health care facilities, not only hospitals, but also care for the aging and for clinics as well. Do you think there's support from the GOP to look at these two areas?
Well, you know, I'm really concerned about our hospitals. To be clear, the changes in policy that were made were common sense reforms to some of these entitlement programs, specifically for Medicaid. It is work requirements for folks to receive Medicaid benefits if people are able-bodied and don't have young dependents. So, you know, someone that's disabled, they're still going to get Medicaid benefits. Someone that has young children will still get Medicaid benefits. Folks that are in their mid-50s, I'm approaching that, who can work and are just choosing not to, those people have to start working for 20 hours a week in order to receive Medicaid benefits. So that's pretty common sense in my view. Those changes to the program don't go into effect for a year and a half or, you know, for quite a few months here. Meanwhile, in the bill, we're able to insert $50 billion to really strengthen and solidify and really help our rural hospitals. And, you know, those dollars and the applications, what they'll look like that's being formulated right now. But, rest assured the intent and I'm working to make sure that we hold to this is for those dollars to go to our rural, most vulnerable hospitals, which is exactly what we ought to be doing right now.
Well, SNAP spending has proven to be a polar point. At the same time, there are still more people that are food insecure today than during the COVID pandemic. Does that need to be revisited?
Well, you know, the changes made to SNAP were, and realize SNAP or food nutrition is 81% of the farm bill today. But the changes made, those common sense reforms were similar to the work requirements for Medicaid. So if someone is able-bodied, meaning they're not disabled, and they do not have young dependents, then to receive benefits, they have to work until they're 65, 20 hours. They have to work full-time. They have to work 20 hours a week To be able to receive those benefits. They also have to be United States citizens to be able to receive those benefits. So those were the changes made. There's also policy in place now to incentivize states to more efficiently and effectively administer the programs. Common sense reforms, if I talk to folks in Kansas and you explain the bill and what we did, you know, very popular, and the majority of folks in the Big First District of Kansas at least agree that that's the direction we ought to go.
So from the Big First District, you produce more than you consume with regard to food, and export markets are important. And at this point, the number one buyer of ag commodities, China, has no record of purchases for our new crop year. Any counsel that you offer to the administration with regard to their trade policy, and especially in dealing with the Chinese?
Yeah, well, I think we have to acknowledge that we are, you know, China is, for some of, not all, but for some of our ag products, you know, their biggest market. They're also our biggest competitor on the global stage. They steal our trade secrets. They are scaling up their military. You know, appreciate it when they buy our ag products, but rest assured they are not our friend on the global stage, and they want to be the dominant power and force in the world, which is not a good thing. We have got to continue to grow, foster, and further trade relationships with other countries as well, so that we're less dependent on China. In the meantime, though, you know, the Chinese have made certain, we struck the phase one China trade deal years ago. They never kept to those commitments. We've got to continue to increase our export markets overseas, which are increasing, by the way. You know, you look at year over year, we're going to export more grain this year than we did last year. That's a good thing, but we've got to keep working on that as well. I appreciate it. President Trump, you know, the first trade deal struck were early ones in the UK, Japan. Big parts of those deals were American beef, ethanol as well, and that's a good thing for the American farmer.
I have to listen to the farmer that could easily lament that there was a deal on TikTok with China, or at least the framework of it, before there was a deal on soybeans, corn, and other commodities.
Yeah, well, the TikTok thing started over a year ago. You know, that was starting the last administration. But when, I think it's important to point out that when President Trump ended his first term, when you look at ag trade, we had a $6 billion, the United States had a $6 billion trade surplus. So we're exporting $6 billion more than importing. When Trump started the first day of his second term, we're at a $38 billion trade deficit, where we're importing $38 billion more than we're exporting. We've got to get to a better place. We've got to get to fair trade. We've got to see these non-tariff trade barriers go down so that we have a level playing field. Because we have a level playing field, we know that our ag producers can outcompete the rest of the world.
So when we talked to the members of the Organic Trade Association last week, they've got a couple of pieces of legislation that they are purporting for Congress. They recognize that there is tremendous consumer demand, especially in our younger generations, toward those products that carry the organic seal. But they quickly suggest that there's over $500 million worth of product coming in, and they're not quite sure that those imports are living up to the standards that U.S. producers are providing. And they'd also like to see some incentives to help producers be able to preserve the identity of those crops that are organic. Does this fall in a farm bill, or where does a discussion like this take place, and what chances does it have?
Yeah, a potentially farm bill, certainly trade-related. So, you know, the farm bill speaks to trade a little bit, specifically on programs like market access programs and foreign market development. Most things trade, and probably the majority of things that you were discussing will fall under the jurisdiction of the Ways and Means Committee. That said, you know, we got to make sure that anything coming into this country is safe, you know, for the American public, without a doubt.
There is discussion in the rail industry of another consolidation, that between Union Pacific and Norfolk Southern. And I haven't spent a lot of time in Kansas, but the time that I've been there, it's obvious that railroads are important, and they are certainly important to the nation. How do we address this issue of what's best for the bottom line and what's best for those being served?
Yeah, well, we got to make sure that our ag producers have the ability to get their grains and we get our ag products off the farm, you know, out of fields, and to the mouths that are going to consume them. So a rail delivery system incredibly important. The particular deal that you referenced, you know, it'll be reviewed. It'll need to be approved or not approved, and then that review period will be underway. Certainly front and center in that, in my view, is making sure that no service is interrupted and that, you know, that customers, you know, benefit with more efficiencies over time. But that review is pending, certainly, and we'll see what ends up coming of it over the next few months, which could take, quite a while to play out here.
When Tom Vilsack was Secretary of Agriculture, he was quick to point out that rural development was important to keep the populace in rural portions of the country. The young people don't want to come back to areas where there's not health care, where there's not broadband, where they don't have some of these common services. So as we are talking about policy and we're talking about farm policy, where do we need to concentrate in rural development to make sure that there's not a rural-urban divide?
Great question. We had a subcommittee hearing on exactly that, on the House Ag Committee, a subcommittee that I'm on exactly that. You know, so I grew up in a town of 800 people and, went to a, you know, very rural. There's not a stoplight in our county. We drive 60 miles, you know, to go to the movie theater or to McDonald's at that time growing up. And so, you know, living in rural communities is a fantastic place to grow up. It's a fantastic lifestyle. But we got to make sure that we keep our rural communities going. And I tell people all the time that our rural communities, you know, the basic values that make America, America, which I would say are faith, family, hard work, personal responsibility, caring for your neighbor. You know, those values are alive and well in our rural communities. But we got to make sure that our rural communities don't just survive, but thrive, in order to keep these basic values alive and well. And so, you know, for rural communities to thrive, it's not a one-size-fits-all. They vary greatly. But, you know, you got to have access to health care, got to have good schools, good connectivity, to the Internet. And we got to make sure that we keep our main streets, alive and well to serve the community, serve our farmers, and for the benefit of all.
I asked Senator Charles Grassley recently if he had any second thoughts about nominating Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as the head of Health and Human Services. The Maha Commission is genuine in its effort to bring better health to America, but some of the challenges that they've offered to products that come from the farm and to the way that we farm, they've thrown shade without scientific backing. What are your thoughts about the Maha Commission, and have they stepped beyond, perhaps, their jurisdiction?
Well, my big thing, one, I appreciate Secretary Rollins is on that commission, speaking for agriculture. My big thing is we need to make sure that we follow the science. What does the scientific data say about the safety of our food? It says, I believe that it's safe, that the farming practice we're using, you know, it has been safe for a long time, is safe. We have a safe food supply. And we got to make sure that, you know, as those reports and things come out, that we're following sound science, certainly if and as it impacts anything from a policy perspective.
So when we have a commission that makes a stab against canola oil and soybean oil and high fructose corn syrup, that are products approved by the FDA, but yet shade thrown by the commission, that ultimately has an impact on the farmer bottom line and the industry that helps to provide them.
Yeah, and you'd have to ask the folks on that commission their take on that. But certainly, when someone is insinuating that our food supply that is backed up by sound, proven science isn't safe, I don't agree with that. The food that we produce in Kansas and around our great country is safe. We got to continue to reassure the public of that, and that's where we really ought to be focusing on, in my view, here moving forward.
So, Congressman, my thoughts toward a farm bill are this. There are those who adamantly want to see a resolution to Proposition 12 included in a farm bill. There are those who are opposed to that resolution being there. Where do you stand?
Well, and we've had a lot of discussions about this, and my concern is I appreciate states have individual rights, but we can't be in a position where, you know, every state has individual rules around what food can or cannot be consumed in that state. You know, this notion of you know, what works for California is good for everybody else is just not really how the country is set up. And that's true in food. It's also true in other regulations as well. I was the original co-sponsor of the bill that prevented or struck down California's ability to effectively, get away or ban the combustion engine here in a few years. Like that is not something we can't be in a situation where car companies have to produce their different types of vehicles to meet the requirements of different states. And I believe it would be the same should apply to our food supply.
Well, Congressman Nguyen, we want to thank you very much for taking time out of your schedule there in Washington to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. It is Open Mic, and, sir, you've got the last word today.
Well, I would just say, you know, we've got to keep praying for our country and believing that our best days are yet to come. I get to represent the big first district of Kansas, one of the biggest ag districts in the country. The exact center of the entire country is in my district. It's in Lebanon, Kansas, which is Smith County, north central Kansas. And, you know, there's so much we need to be proud of for our country, but we need to be praying for our country as we really begin to usher in the celebration of our 250th birthday here next summer. So we have a lot of work ahead of us, but we still have the greatest country in the history of the world, and we all got to continue to work every day to make it better.
Our thanks to Representative Tracy Mann of the Kansas Big First District, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Elliott.